10 people who got nominated.
Yeah.
Managed to get a bit of a group together, beat the Lib Dems. Chief exec of General Electric said, we've got to learn to fail fast around here. You know, and very, very clearly spells out the, you know, the carbon cycle over the last 200 million years. To me, it's a non-entity issue. And more than that, it's costing us a fortune.
I'll put it. Hello, and a warm welcome to the Reform Party podcast. Today I'm here with Wendy Whittaker-Lars, my co-host, and Martin York. Martin, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Do you want to start by just by telling people a bit about yourself?
Yeah, where to start? I mean, let's go back a bit, okay?
And how far are we going back?
I'm
going
to go back to where I started with a political view.
Right.
Okay, which was actually, I was one of the few to vote against the Wilson referendum. So that was probably my first...
that's going back.
That's probably my first rebellious point in my political career. I then was a big fan of Thatcher. Went all the way through the Thatcher years. I never actually joined the Conservative Party, but always voted. I, in fact, lived in her constituency in London at that time. Before that, an RAF officer in the engineer branch. Went into business and spent most of my life in the business world, you know, in tech. Had the fortune at one point in my life to be a direct report to Steve Jobs, which was a fascinating time, you know, understanding the way that kind of tech was moving. Mm. I first really got involved with politics at the John Major Blair election, when I couldn't vote for either of them.
Mm.
So I voted Monster Raving Loony as a rebellion. There's nothing else I could do. You know, I mean, I wouldn't vote for Major, having, you know, done what he did to Thatcher. Blair, I saw right through and told my kids, you know, you're going to have, you know, a right problem with this guy when he comes along, and it proved to be right. And then the real time when I started to get active was my partner Patricia and I were up in Whitby on a long weekend in 2016, and we were walking along the front, and there was this whacking great bus leave. Oh yeah, I'm on that, you know. So we went and I spent the whole afternoon with them campaigning, and from then on, I sort of got more and more involved.
And was that Brexit Party at that time?
No, it wasn't the Brexit Party. It was the Leave campaign.
Right.
The Brexit Party didn't get formed till 2019.
Okay.
So as soon as it got formed, I joined.
Right.
Put my name down to be an MEP, didn't make it because no one knew me. But I was very active in that campaign, worked in Crewe, worked in Macclesfield, Congleton, all over the place, you know, campaigning. And got selected as the parliamentary candidate for Macclesfield.
Right.
Didn't stand because Nigel pulled us all out.
Mm. But just 2019.
Yeah. But I got a phone call from a guy who was then one of the sort of leaders in the, what I would call the official side of the party rather than the parliamentary side of the party. He said, get your ass up to Macclesfield. Not Macclesfield, sorry, to Wallasey. And I want you to stand there in the...
All right.
So there's me with 2 days to get nominated, not knowing where Wallasey was, let alone how to get there.
I could have told you.
I know you could, yeah. Anyway, I got there with my my phone, a paper copy of the electoral register, which is all I could get at the time, and a list of people from what we had then, Nation Builder, which wasn't as good as the one we've got now, and phoned up 10 people and got nominated.
Yeah.
Managed to get a bit of a group together, beat the Lib Dems. Yeah, I was never going to win it, you know, not with woman there, you know. So
Angela.
Yeah, dear old Angela. But, you know, it was a good experience, you know. I really got involved with that. And, you know, then came COVID, so everyone took a back seat and everything. And put my name forward as the, what was then, spokesperson for Congleton, because that's where I live.
Mm.
Got accepted. I knew a lot of the people anyway from the Brexit Party. And as a result, was the parliamentary candidate here. Came third again, but I was, with a 14% average across the country, we hit close to 17. So we did pretty well. Mm. But the big thing we did was actually start to build a team.
Yeah.
And we've now got a very good core team, but it's not big enough.
Yeah. Yeah,
like everybody, they've all got the same problem. Yeah,
I think that's right. I mean, I think that that last election, it was the catalyst for branches to form, for people to meet each other, for supporters to go out, and that has been the core then of the where we are now. I mean, we've a branch. I don't know how big yours. I think we're 2,500 now. And you know, it's that's the, that came from those election campaigns.
Yeah, I mean, we've got about 1,200 on the database, of which nearly 600 are members. Mm. The rest are supporters. Yeah. And yeah, so yeah, I mean, the problem, I think, and I think it's the same talking to other branch chairs, is you know, you've got a fairly good core team of 50, 60 people. Yeah. Beyond that, it's getting people involved, and that's the biggest challenge.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about that, Martin? I'd like to understand. Obviously, we've got we haven't got local elections locally for Cheshire in 2026. Yeah. But we will have in 2027.
27, yeah.
So, for a lot of people in your position, a lot of chairs across the UK branches of Reform UK, they are going to be preparing now for this year's local elections, those that are going ahead, of course, and 2027. For those who are in that kind of process, what advice would you give them about preparing?
Well, what we're doing at the moment, as well you're aware because you've seen the plan, I thought this through quite a lot of time thinking it through. What do we actually do? I mean, A, we've got to get the right candidates. B, we've got to be prepared for the campaign. C, we've got to actually get the buy-in of the other branches in Cheshire East, because it's a county, effectively. And we've got ourselves, Macclesfield, Tatton and Crewe, and a bit of Mid-Cheshire, because we've got Middlewiches. But what I wanted to do was to get some sort of template going that allowed us to create a sort of a programme. And I've given it an acronym, CERP, C-E-R-P-P. Cheshire East Reform Preparing Programme. Okay, but SERP sounds.
Not sure it'll catch on.
The actual words won't, but SERP sounds quite good. Yeah. Okay, and basically that's split into several areas. It's, you know, what are we going to do to campaign? You know, we've got a good campaign manager. He's looking after that stuff. It's getting all the activists together. In fact, this coming 2 weeks' time, we've got meetings in two of the wards, trying to get more and more people in the wards. We've got a chap who's looking after what I would call the detail of requirements to actually manage when we get into the Cheshire. There's a chap who's called Andy Large, who I've asked to do that.
Well.
Yeah, I've asked Andy to look after that. He's very numerate. He understands an awful lot. He's very passionate. So what we're doing there is to have a deep dive into, you know, the finances, where we can save money, how we should make improvements, and basically, from that, we'll spring forward our message. Mm. What message will we give to the public of the Congleton constituency for that particular election come May 27? And that's really where I'm driving at the moment. So that's really important to get that right. Around that, we've got events that we need to do, fundraising that we need to do. So all of this is part of that programme. Mm. So we're basing a sort of a template programme, which will change as time goes on, as we find out, and as we make mistakes. And the more mistakes we make, the better, because the quicker you fail, the learning, you know, I can't remember who it was. I think it was head chief exec of General Electric said, we've got to learn to fail faster around here, you know. And, you know, I'm a great believer in that, in business and in politics. You know, if you make a mistake, okay, you got it wrong, get it right next time.
What about candidates? That's one area you haven't really mentioned yet.
Well, I haven't got there yet. Candidates is myself and the deputy chair are looking after that part of the thing. We've got 20 names on the list right now. It's not
for
enough.
For how many?
We need 18.
18.
In this seat, in this, you know, in these wards, we've got two in what we, you probably don't know the wards. So, you know, we've got Odd Road, which is way down there towards Stoke. And it's lots of villages, effectively. Two candidates there. We've got Alsager, which is a town, of which there are three candidates. We've got six in Congleton, because there are two big wards. We've got four in Sandbach and two up in Holmes Chapel area. So we've got 18 in total. We've got 20 on the list. It's not enough. We want the luxury of choice when the time comes, and we're putting forward an interview programme which the Deputy Chair and myself will be conducting throughout the next 2 to 3 months. Mm. we've got to get more candidates on board, you know, and on top of that, there are town councils. So there are 56, I think, seats on town councils in Alsatia, Congleton and Sandbach. So it's a big, diverse constituency. Oh, and the one I didn't mention, which is the biggest one of the lot, which is called Britain Rural. It tells you everything. It's probably 2/3 of the 320 farms that are in this constituency. Mm. So it's a huge, huge area. Very difficult from a campaigning point of view. I mean, in the general election, I delivered 200 letters in Britain. It took me 2 days. Mm. You know, it's that kind of thing. You have to drive everywhere. So there are challenges. You know, I think the biggest challenge is, A, getting the right candidates with the right background and the right understanding of the reforms requirements in terms of where we're going as a party, what our values are, do we really believe in these things, are these the kind of people that are going to deliver that? And then on top of that, have they got the skill sets to actually do a job when they get into council? You know, we need a complete spectrum of people in that
respect. And what sort of skill sets are you finding people have?
If I were to define ideal, I mean, you're not going to find it all in one candidate, no. You know, but there are different jobs that need to be done in...
But are you generally finding candidates that you would see are quality candidates?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a few people, for example, one really good guy who's a top quality project manager in construction. Mm. You know, that's the kind of animal who will be very, very useful when it comes to running projects, you know, looking after projects in the council. I can't say what that council will look like. We're not elected, you know, and there are other branches. And, you know, if we win, which I think we can, I'm pretty sure we can, actually, if we get to that point, that's what I want to try and do, is have enough quality people that can actually make a difference in the council when we get there. Okay, so we need people with soft skills. We need, you know, people, because there's a whole lot of things like, you know, the services for adult social care, child and social care, and all this sort of stuff. We need financially erudite people. You know, there's a whole raft of skill sets. So we're building a skills inventory. Mm. And so in terms of your question, it's a long answer, but it's a big project.
Yes.
And I would say that if you're taking this seriously, you've got to do something similar. And what I want to do now is to get this through a pilot stage, and then I'm talking to Simon, who is the Cheshire coordinator, about how do we get anything that we're doing, you know, across the whole of Cheshire East, because it's got to apply to us, Macclesfield, the others. It's got to go across, okay? Mm. But you know, I see that, you know, we drive this thing forward from our point of view.
What about people who perhaps don't want to stand as candidates for various different reasons? They either don't feel ready, or they just don't, it doesn't appeal to them. How could they still be involved in the local party?
Well, the most important thing is being, you know, activists, getting out on the street, knocking on doors, talking to people. You know, to me, you know, that is the biggest challenge. I mean, with this particular constituency, because of the size of it, excuse me, geographically, and because of the diversity of terrain, effectively, I mean, I can knock on 25 doors in 10 minutes down the road in Congleton East. Piece of cake. If I want to knock on 25 doors in Britain, it's going to take me half a day. Mm. So we've got that sort of problem. You know, so, but your question really is about getting involved with the campaign, with the messaging, with, I mean, I've got two or three people who are older than me, and I'm old, right, who are very, very good at putting envelopes and letters and stuff like that together, but, you know, they can't get out. They help, but I haven't got enough foot soldiers, and I don't think any branch has.
Yeah.
You know, we've got 40,000 doors to knock on.
Yeah. So tell me, how are you finding as a branch chairman, how are you finding your relationship is with our head office?
It's fine.
And what interactions do you have with them?
Well, I'm very fortunate in that I know most of the folks personally, okay? Having been around the Brexit party, I mean, Adam Bounds and I campaigned together during the the Brexit election, you know. I know most of the guys, and that helps.
Right.
And I think because of my time in the two parties, that helps me, because I know people.
Yeah.
So I don't have a problem with relationships.
Yeah. And supposing you've got something that you want to filter right to the top of the party, you know, we know who where the top is, don't we?
Yeah.
I mean, he's maybe not particularly interested in what you've got to say, but if you had something very important that you wanted to feed up the chain and get some action at board level or top level, could you do that?
I think it's great from my point of view personally that I've been around a while and therefore I get to know people, and that makes a difference. And I get it when, you know, I meet people who've just taken over a branch, they don't know anybody, and it's hard, you know. But you've actually got to put yourself about and get to know people.
Yeah.
Martin, one of the things I'm interested in is, at a local government level, we obviously focus on a lot of local issues.
Yeah.
Things like roads, you know, potholes, they always come up, bin collections. These are the things that bother people locally. But how does that integrate with a national perspective on issues like, say, immigration or net zero? How do we translate those into a local message?
Well, it depends what campaign you're fighting, I think. You know, I mean, I'm a great believer in getting the message right. You know, so if I'm fighting a by-election, you know, like we're just about to fight up the road, you know, you're talking a lot about local and national. If you're fighting a general election, it's mainly national. If you're fighting a local election, what matters to folk? You've got to ask that question. And the way you do that is to talk to people. Once you've got that, you can then message it back. So net zero is one of my particular bugbears, you know. I don't believe that there is a problem. You know, I'm a total skeptic in that space. I'm a great follower of, what's his name? Patrick Moore, if you know him, Dr. Yeah. Patrick Moore, who very, very clearly spells out the carbon cycle over the last 200 million years. To me, it's a non-entity issue. And more than that, it's costing us a fortune.
Well, putting that aside, we've had in Wirral, we've had quite a week, really, because we came across this project called Peak Cluster.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And basically Peak Cluster is a project whereby what they're proposing, it's a carbon capture and storage project.
Yeah.
And they're capturing all the carbon dioxide from making cement in the lime in Staffordshire. You know about
it. Right. Yeah.
It goes through north of Cheshire, doesn't it?
Well, it does. It goes right up the Wirral.
Yeah,
now, the first consultation on it was on Saturday, and we as a branch went along. We had a dozen people there, and we went to the consultation. And by the time we left the consultation, there were 400 people there, I reckon, with queues out in the corridor. There was people queued in the corridor for an hour just to get in.
Wow.
So there's a huge... Suddenly, we have been talking about CCS projects for the last year. We have a chap, Mark Fleming, who's pretty much the expert on CCS and is very good. He's been on the podcast before. And we'll be doing another podcast shortly on the Peak Cluster thing. So, as I say, we had this happened on Saturday. By Monday, not us, but somebody else had set up a Facebook page to do with the CCS. At over 1,000 members, private page. It's just colossal.
Amazing. So all these people are objecting to
it? Yeah, absolutely. Well, I don't think there was many in favour.
No.
Because what it is, it's so interesting because, you know, you go along to the council meetings and you've got the chair of the Environment, Climate, Emergency and Transport Committee.
Yeah.
Who is a Labour, and it's an absolute... a supporter of Extinction Rebellion,
yes,
and a net zero zealot.
Yeah.
We went along to the meeting last night and said to her, "Well, look, you've now got this Peak Cluster thing. You can see absolute consternation because people do not want a big pipeline to be, you know, run up the Wirral and then a big compression plant in North Wirral before
this. How much is it going to cost?"
Well, the whole thing was $22 billion,
yeah,
but I think that was Teesside as well.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's costing a fortune.
And not only that, they can't prove the technology at this point.
No, it's completely unproven. It's an experiment.
When Mad Ed put that forward about 18 months ago, I looked into it. I mean, I've got a master's degree in engineering,
right.
So I look at these things, you know, from an engineering point of view, and I thought there's no way they're going to make that work for the few billion that they're talking about. You know, you're talking hundreds of billions to make that now. And why do it?
Yes.
Why do it? carbon at the moment is less than 2% of the Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah.
Right? And actually, without it, plants die.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's a stupid, stupid thing. And actually, if you do believe that you should go to net zero, which I don't, there's only one way to do it. And it's not wind, and it's not solar, it's nuclear. And you've got to do that now, and we've got to put money into these small modular reactors. If we don't do that, we're going to fail.
I totally agree with you, but my point really was in terms of politics.
Yeah.
Because we have a chair there, as I say, who's a net zero zealot, but she can't support it. She can't support this pipeline because she knows that if she does, she loses her whole constituency. There's a solar farm which they're putting just by the Wirral Way, which is one of the nicest walks in the Wirral. So I asked a question last night on the solar farm, you know, what's your view on it? And she can't say, I support it, because, you know, she loses all her votes.
This is bonkers, isn't it? I mean, I did a calculation on the unit cost of an kilowatt hour, based on the capital cost of doing things over a 100-year period. Okay, if you look at solar and wind versus nuclear, small modular reactors have a lifespan of about 60 years. Solar has a lifespan of 10 to 15. Wind, depending where it's located, has a lifespan of between 10 and 20 years.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have to renew them every time. Taking all that into account, and I use the AI to do it because it's much easier than doing it yourself, it turns out that if you do it nuclear, this is capital cost only, not running costs, not people costs, just the capital cost of the equipment. It roughly works out at 1.5 pence per unit for the nuclear, and about 8 pence per unit for the others. Now, that's the capital cost. That's not the running cost. It's not the infrastructure. It is the infrastructure. It's the cost of connecting to the grid and all this. Sorry, I'm on one of my pet subjects.
The thing about this CCS thing, or the killer thing, is that we can go to council and we can get all the people and all the councillors to agree with us that it's terrible. Yeah. We can't do it. It doesn't matter.
They're going to do it anyway.
So it's an infrastructure project, which is national infrastructure project. So local planning consent is not required.
No, they just shouldn't do it.
There's nothing the council can do to stop it.
The only solution
is a reform government.
Well, yes. But I think there's a solution before that.
Stop paying your council tax.
Well, no, I wasn't going to suggest that. No, I think that what as reform we need to do is, first of all, we need to make absolutely explicit that we're against the carbon capture and storage projects.
Yeah.
Right? So you say, reform are against it. And then you say, the first day we're in government, we're going to defund all CCS projects up and down the country.
Yeah.
Anybody who's put private money into these projects will lose it. You know, there'll be no compensation for anybody who's supported these projects. You then take that statement, you take that round all of the privates. I mean, one of the main people behind this peak cluster project is Gordon Brown. He's on the board of one of the companies.
Yeah, I know he is. Yeah.
And so, you know, what you need to do, as I say, all these private companies, you need to say, well, it means, okay, go and do your CCS, go and start digging some pipes, put some pipes in. But on first day of reform government, that's it, you've lost all your money.
Well, of course, Richard Tice has already sent that warning across the bow, hasn't he, to other environmental energy companies, wind farms and so on, and those that are bidding for some of those licences, basically saying that we will turn over those contracts. One of the challenges, though, that we're going to have is that many of those contracts will have already been entered into. So there's going to be a withdrawal from
if
those
you
contracts.
Warn them
unwinding this is going to be hard.
If you warn people in advance that you're going to do it, I don't see how they can then take any action.
No, it's still going to be hard. I mean, Ed Stupid Mid, you know.
Yes. Well, I think
he's really, you know, these contracts that they've let recently are bonkers.
Madness, absolutely madness. Mm. They're going to cost the taxpayer so much money every month. It's ridiculous. Yeah. But I think coming back to the peak cluster, what surprises me is the number of private industrial businesses that are manufacturing cement, digging up lime. You know, they're the ones who are, if you like, at the heart of this industry. They have been somehow persuaded that this is a good idea.
They've rolled over.
Well, I wonder what subsidies they're getting. There must be a reason why they're doing this, because all of these are heavy industries. And I am very, very surprised to think that they would be working in partnership with a government who wants to increase carbon capture and storage.
I suspect, Wendy, there'll be a bit of carrot and a bit of stick
involved.
Yeah, two of both. But isn't it a shame that those private companies don't have the courage of their convictions to stand up and say, actually, we don't want to be involved in this project. We don't think it's going to work.
Then we close you down and you're out of business. That's a big stick.
Yeah, well, true. Yes, yes. Okay, so these are some of the issues, though, that we might find on the doorstep.
Well, yeah, and the reason I brought it up here, you know, down in, because you are right in...
We're in the line for it.
We should all be, all our branches should be getting together to fight this together.
I agree.
And we should also be feeding up, as I say, to the top. What we need you to do is to come out and explicitly say that investors in CCS projects will not be compensated.
That's a good point. That's a good point. But I do believe, going back to what you were saying earlier, that the thing that the local chap thinks more about from a... When you talk about local council, it's, why am I paying 58 quid a month a year to have my green waste removed? You know, why is the potholes not fixed? This road down here that you've just driven up about 6 months ago was an absolute nightmare. You know, you wouldn't dare drive down it because that's... Sorry, I'm thinking too quickly. Slow down.
Your suspension in your car would have broken, wouldn't it?
I was about to say. Outside Asprey Garden Centre is a whacking great pothole. My car is currently in having a wheel bearing fixed. Nothing to do with potholes. But when I went in there to book it, this guy had a brand new 4x4 on his ramp. The whole suspension gone. Wheel broken because of that pothole outside Asprey Garden Centre. Right? That's what local people think about.
Yes, exactly. You know,
but councils get sued for that, don't they?
Well,
they can.
Not everybody
will do it.
I'm not sure. I think the pothole has to have been reported.
I think that's the case.
If it hasn't, then they didn't know, therefore they're not. I think that's the case, but I wouldn't be sure of that. Mm. They think about that. They think about, why am I paying for my garden waste? They don't actually think about why the council's spending all this money on stuff that they shouldn't be.
But I do think a lot of people are concerned about adult health and social care, and also about, for example, the big topic of the day, of course, is SEND, children with special needs. Now, these obviously affect a proportion of the population. And as a reform council, we are going to be going in saying, well, we're going to have to make some serious efficiency savings to those particular departments.
It's statutory, we can't do anything about that.
It's statutory, absolutely.
So we're stuck with that. Actually, does the average Joe on the doorstep really understand that? Is a question.
I'm not sure, but the average Joe on the doorstep may well be affected by it negatively or positively, because positively we could potentially reduce their council tax bill. That's a positive. But on the other hand, if they've got a child with special needs or they've got a member of their family who needs
support. But I think it's the efficiencies. I mean, I know of a case where someone is taking a taxi every day from here to somewhere near Stoke-on-Trent because there isn't a place to send that child.
Yeah.
And the council are paying for that taxi. Is that the right way to do it? If you've got a SEND requirement, then you've got to do it. There's no doubt about that. But are there not better ways? Can't they do something more locally? You know, spend money in a more sensible way to actually get a better result.
Well, we had Simon Evans on the podcast a few weeks back, and he's now deputy leader, of course, of Lancashire. And he was telling us what they're doing up there, and they're more or less stopping all the taxis and going over. They had their own minibuses and doing it that way.
Which is what Cheshire used to do. Mm. They used to have lots of minibuses collecting children and taking them to special schools.
Yeah, but again, where are the special schools?
Yes.
You know, think big, think, why haven't we got a special school somewhere near here that could serve Macclesfield and ourselves? And, why have we got to send them to wherever they're sending them,
The other thing is, I think we need a much closer analysis of what these special needs are.
Absolutely.
Because the thing has been expanded so much now. I mean, there are genuinely a lot of pupils out there who have got special needs and these needs need to be accommodated. But because they've now taken in so many other things which they now count as special needs, so ADHD, mild autism, all these things, which, you know, then require the council to go through the same hoops as for somebody who is genuinely disabled.
Yes.
You know, it's just not sustainable in terms of economics.
Another issue, of course, is farming. So obviously, in Congleton and in Cheshire East, we've got we've got a big agricultural community.
As I said, there are 320 farms in the constituency. Now, none of them huge.
Yeah.
You know, they're all pretty much fairly small small holdings, you would say. You know, hundreds of acres. You know, mixed agriculture, cattle, sheep. Depending whereabouts.
But however, obviously farming has been an absolute touch paper for the Labour government because of what they've done. No wonder. I think the whole of the UK has been behind the farming community, seeing what the National Labour Party have done.
Yeah.
I think that locally, and for anybody watching the podcast who's also in a sort of rural community or certainly has patches of their constituency which are rural, this surely is going to resonate massively with their population. How do you think within Congleton we could utilise that kind of that anger that is towards the Labour government, but absolutely rooted within our local constituency?
I know for a fact that the sort of local farmers have got together with other constituencies. I was talking to a National Day of the Farm thing about, when was it, September?
Yes. They protested in London, didn't they?
Yeah, I was going to go to that, but I had to do something else, and I can't remember what. But my then deputy chair went to Macclesfield, where they were actually in the square outside the town hall with tractors. Mm. And there are a lot of active people in the farming community. Yeah, we should get in touch. We should actually, you're right. That's a good thought.
Good idea.
Yeah.
And I think it's those kind of things, isn't it, which is where, aside from the mundanity of bins, potholes, all the things that we kind of complain and moan about, I think it's getting to know our constituency and our constituents.
Mm.
Because we know also in Congleton there are a lot of small businesses, even where we are today. It's a small unit.
Yeah.
This is a small podcast studio. There's a small team downstairs that run it. But this is an industrial site where there are many other small businesses.
Oh, there are a lot. I mean, Congleton has got a lot. There are industrial sites across the whole constituency.
And I think it's not just about getting an understanding of what they do, but talking to those business owners, finding out how the changes, for example, to national insurance, energy prices, taxation, all of these elements. Again, these are national issues, but they affect them at a local level.
You've got to look at the high street as well. Where are the really high street? Congleton's got one. Sandbatcher's got one.
Yeah.
Alsatia's got sort of.
Yes.
And when you look down,
Holmes Chapel's got a little bit of.
It's got a precinct. Mm. And on top of that, hospitality is another issue. There's loads of pubs around here, and hostelries and things of that sort, who are going to suffer big time.
Yes, absolutely.
They really are.
I think also, Congleton, probably a bit like where you're from, Ken, we're actually extremely well connected. We've got a big M6 motorway that goes right through our patch. We're actually not far from some key mainline railway stations.
Yeah, Stoke and Crewe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we've got some very good subsidiary stations.
Well, Macclesfield's a mainline.
Exactly. And so connectivity is very, very good. We've got a lot of lovely countryside.
Yeah.
We've got lots of lovely walks. We've got some great country pubs. In terms of tourism, we should be attracting people to this area.
Yeah.
But as you say, the problem is that with pubs, with the hospitality industry decreasing generally anyway, and with this increase in business rates, this is going to massively affect our local area.
Absolutely.
So I think that one of the jobs, if you like, of a local party, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're the chair, not me.
Yeah, please correct her.
You're doing a good job there, Wendy.
I've been dying for somebody to do that for ages, Martin. Correct, Wendy.
Thank you, Ken. I'm going to edit that bit out.
Look, I know this lady. That's a hard task, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's actually about connecting those dots for people, isn't it? And because I think sometimes local people just kind of, shrug their shoulders, breathe out a big sigh, think, oh, you know, this country, oh, my business, oh, my job, and just kind of get on with it. As a local party, what we can be doing is connecting the dots for them and saying, yes, but if this hadn't happened, then you wouldn't be suffering. If this wasn't the national
government,
this wouldn't
be. It goes back to what I said early on. You know, I mean, 40,000 households, 320 farms, God knows how many square miles, and probably 25 people who actually get out and make that message.
Yeah.
Okay. And does social media do it? To an extent, you know. But if you go to some of these states around here, you know, what are their social media input? You know, it's probably not political.
Yes, exactly. You know?
I mean, the local...
Is that not to do with, though, how you're using the social media? In other words, there's no reason in principle why social media shouldn't be political. Maybe most people don't. But, for example, the one I mentioned earlier, you know, you put a Facebook page up, a 1,000 people in 2 days.
But those 1,000 people are people who care about that subject.
But you need to find what people do care about and then connect
to that. No, I don't dispute that. I mean, the thing that actually people are on more than Facebook or anything is a thing called Nextdoor.
Yeah, Nextdoor's huge.
Yes,
yeah.
Nextdoor locally, I mean, but what's in there? I've got a so-and-so for sale, or anyone come and clear my drains. And
I mentioned Mark Fleming earlier, who's got this blog and so on, which on CCS, which he's been doing for about a year now. He gets 6,000-7,000 views on Nextdoor regularly, for a new blog post.
That's very good. Yeah,
that's a good point.
Well, of course, that's why we do the podcast, isn't it? You know, we cover national issues, we cover local issues, and it's actually about getting the voice of people who are at the grassroots level. And obviously, both of you have officer roles in your local branches, but nevertheless, you're still grassroots. You're speaking to people day in, day out in your local area to find out what is bugging them about the way the country is being run and how it infiltrates down at a local level. And I think until we get reform, not only at national level into government, but also majority of councils run, in fact, all councils run by reform and town councils.
I've got two key targets. Number one, Winchester East. Number two, find and put forward a candidate who's going to win Congleton for the general election whenever that comes. Okay, so those are my two key targets. I'm not going to stand again. For Parliament, I'd be absolutely blunt. Why? Because if I did at the end of the parliamentary term, if it was 29, I'd be into my 80s, and I'm not going to be. I'd be too old to do that.
Yeah, there comes a time to it when you've got to draw the line.
Yeah, but I'm still full of energy to do this and to get those things done. But I can't see myself in 2036.
2036.
You know, being in a point where I would want to do that, you know, so that's why I won't be standing for Parliament again. But I'm going to try.
Well, I'm sure you'll find lots of people who are willing to take that role up. There'll be lots of people who would, you know, love to do that. So I'm sure that won't be a problem for you.
I don't think it is. You know, I mean, I know I can think three or four now.
Look, thanks very much indeed for coming in today. It's been a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah.
As I say, I haven't met you before, and I'm sure we've made some progress somewhere. Would you agree?
Well, we've had fun anyway.
Yeah. We have. Martin, absolutely. It's been great to have you. And thank you for coming in and bringing a local voice to what's going on in the branch of Congleton. I think it's
No, no.